A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. It has been a while since we've done a Mondays with Mark, but Armed American Radio's Mark Walter is going to be with us here in just a moment or two, primarily talking about what's going on in the state of Virginia. I promise you, we're not going to be focusing exclusively on Virginia once the legislative sessions get underway. I know that there are 49 other states in the union beyond the one where I live, but Virginia really is going to be, I think, ground zero for the gun control activists this year, because it is a state that has flipped from divided government, Republicans controlling the governor's office, the lieutenant governor's office, the attorney general's office, Democrats with very narrow control of the House of Delegates and the state Senate, to now Democrats holding every statewide office, the House of Delegates with a veto-proof Democrat majority, let's call it a Democrat supermajority. And the only reason, frankly, that the numbers are still pretty close in the Senate is because the Senate wasn't up for election in 2025. That doesn't happen until 2027. But the 2025 elections were a disaster for Virginia gun owners. And the gun control lobby is going to take full advantage of this. We wrote about this at Bearing Arms last week. The latest bills to drop, a bill that would impose a $500 tax on the sale of suppressors at a time, by the way, in which Democrats are touting affordability as their big priority for the 2026 legislative session. Oh, it's going to be about making life more affordable, except for gun owners, except for those gun owners who want to protect their hearing. Nope, in that case, we're going to make it $500 more expensive for you to purchase a suppressor. And frankly, that number could go up. Right now it's $500. They may increase it to $5,000. I have no idea. In addition, we saw the first semi-auto ban bill introduced late last week. This is House Bill 217. As it's written right now, it bans the sale, manufacture, transfer of so-called assault firearms, which it's basically, you know, the Dianne Feinstein definition of a so-called assault weapon, right? So it's any semi-automatic centerfire rifle that can accept a detachable magazine and then has one or more of the following features, you know, whether bayonet lug, threaded barrel for you to use with a suppressor. Also, any semi-automatic centerfire rifle with a magazine, with a fixed magazine capacity more than 10 rounds. And then there are, you know, some AR-style pistols that are going to get caught up in this as well. Some semi-automatic shotguns that are going to get wrapped up in this. As it's written right now, there is a grandfather clause for those who currently own these firearms, unless you are 18, 19, or 20 years old, in which case you can't maintain possession of those firearms. Because not only does this bill ban the sale of these so-called assault weapons going forward as of July 1st, 2026, it prohibits their possession outright for adults under the age of 21. I mean, all of this is a lawsuit waiting to happen. But, you know, again, as we talk about with a Mark on today's show, lawsuits take time. And it is going to be a rough couple of years for Virginia gun owners. So, again, that is the bulk of our conversation today. We also talk with Mark a little bit about what happened in the Supreme Court, which denied cert in a case called Markey versus Massachusetts today. That was a case dealing with the discretionary issue of non-resident permits. So in Massachusetts, the Colonel of State Police approves non-resident permit applications, and the Colonel of the Massachusetts State Police has broad discretion to deny somebody based on his decision about whether or not they're suitable to own a firearm. So even though the Supreme Court said in Bruin that if these suitability standards are not consistent with a shall issue system, they're unconstitutional, Supreme Court basically gave Massachusetts a pass here. And that is Not necessarily unsurprising, but it is no less troubling. They did keep a hold of several other Second Amendment-related cases. We'll talk about that with Mark as well. Take a look and a listen. Mark, appreciate you joining me on the program. I feel like I should call you Crocodile Dundee today for some reason. I don't know why.
Those are real crocodile teeth on there, yeah.
That's awesome, man. All right, listen, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. I do want to talk about Virginia. You were gracious enough to have me on the big Monster Cast last night talking about these gun control bills. But we should mention Supreme Court orders came down today, did not accept any new Second Amendment cases. The only one that they denied outright was a case called Markey versus Massachusetts. A little disappointed, not entirely unexpected. This is an issue dealing with right to carry reciprocity, essentially, or the ability for non-residents to carry outside of their home state. One of the first challenges that we've seen get to the Supreme Court. There's another one that's, I believe, pending maybe in a month or so. We'll get to a conference. But this is an issue that the Supreme Court, I think, is going to have to wrestle with sooner or later, right? Because they've said the Second Amendment is not a second-class right, and yet it is the only right that essentially stops at the border of the state where you live right now.
That makes it second class, in my estimation. And thanks for having me, by the way. And thank you for joining the program last night. I wish I had more time with you yesterday because you're in Virginia in the belly of the beast right now, sadly, and you're facing what Virginia's going through. These Supreme Court, I'd like to be able to say to you right now that I'm not disappointed that the Supreme Court didn't take these cases. We've been playing this game with the Supreme Court for years. However, with what's going on in Virginia right now, it's imperative because about three of these cases will impact at least three of the 30 gun controls that the Democrats have in store for Virginia that sadly are going to pass and Spanberger is going to sign. It's that simple.
Yeah.
I wish I had better news, but it's just a fact. And I think reciprocity is one because that's part of a bill right now to scale back reciprocal agreements in the state of Virginia. Last night on the program, I'll give a real life example that we talked about last night here in the state of Georgia, where I reside. We don't have a training requirement. We simply go to our probate court, pay the state a fee, which is a second class right, because now it's a privilege. Mm-hmm. If you want a permit, however, we have constitutional carry here. But if we want to travel with until the rest of the nation goes full bore with constitutional carry, permitless carry, however you want to frame it, as you know, well, guess what happens? We have to have that physical card. That also acts as my background check when I go do the NICS form and all that garbage. We don't have waiting periods here, so it's not a second-class right in Georgia. But if I want to travel to visit my sister who lives a little bit north of you in Virginia, and I want to carry legally, let me throw that out there. Because, right. Guys, you have decisions to make, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. If I want to carry lawfully, legally, under Virginia law, I'm going to need that physical card in my wallet to do so. Right now, that is accepted because Virginia accepts reciprocal agreements with all 50 states, mm-hmm. the other 49, I should say, including mine. But when the new law passes, Georgia is likely going to be wiped out because we don't meet the quote unquote training requirements that Virginia is now going to require, which makes it on par with current Virginia law. So essentially, I will lose my right to carry when I cross that state border. That's that circle. We just come right back to that circle. I'm not going to be unarmed when I'm in Georgia, or when I'm in Virginia. I will tell you that right now, that's my decision. Virginia residents have to make a decision as well. But this is what's in store for you. So that's why some of these cases at the Supreme Court level are so vital, including the assault firearms we talked about, et cetera, which the court could wipe out in one fell swoop. They're ignoring in Virginia all the advancements we've made over the years and all the Supreme Court decisions dating all the way back to 08 and Heller with this nonsense that they're pulling in your state.
Yep, absolutely. Continue on talking about the reciprocity issue for just a moment. I mean, right now, you know, the lower courts have basically said as long as there's an ability for a non-resident to apply for a permit, right? So as long as you can apply for a Virginia permit, well, that's fine. That's not fine because we've got states like California that don't recognize permits from any other state. If every blue state in the country decided to adopt that provision, or let's just say every state in the country decided to adopt that that same attitude, it would take thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. It would take multiple trips around the country simply to apply, right? Because you've got to apply in person in states like Massachusetts or Minnesota. If you want a non-resident permit, you've got to show up in person, either drop off your application, get interviewed. That's completely untenable. It's completely impractical when we're talking again about the exercise of a fundamental constitutional right. Now, getting to Virginia specifically, Duncan versus Bonner, Viramontes versus Cook County, That's a magazine ban, an assault weapon ban case. The Supreme Court did not deny cert. They held on to those cases. Mm-hmm. I am cautiously optimistic, whether it's those two cases, whether it's, you know, the New Jersey cases, we're waiting on the Third Circuit to issue their opinion, and the New Jersey challenges to its ban on so-called assault weapons and magazines. The Illinois cases are still pending before the Seventh Circuit. Oral arguments have been held. We're just waiting for that opinion to come down. Those cases will get appealed up to the Supreme Court, presumably. You know, certainly the Seventh Circuit case will, right? Because mm-hmm. I think there's no doubt the Seventh Circuit is going to uphold Illinois' law. Third mm-hmm. Circuit might not uphold New Jersey's gun and magazine ban. And then it's going to be a question for New Jersey's incoming attorney general. It's not going to be Matt Plotkin because he's out of office. I'm blanking on the new attorney general.
Yeah, me too.
But it's possible that the gun control advocates will say, hey, listen, take the loss. Don't take this case to the Supreme Court because we don't want a nationwide precedent. I don't think they're going to have a choice because I do think the Seventh Circuit is going to uphold Illinois' law. That'll give the plaintiffs a chance to pursue that legal remedy before the Supreme Court. And if the Third Circuit gives us that circuit court split, then the Supreme Court, I think, you know, they don't have to do anything. But I think it really becomes important that they take this case. And in the meantime, you know, we do have states like Virginia that are soon going to be subject to a ban on so-called assault weapons, a ban on large capacity mm-hmm. magazines, quote unquote, defined as any magazine over 10 rounds. And, you know, Mark, we were talking about this yesterday on the show. And, you know, it's interesting, man. You look at like New Mexico, Colorado. New Mexico Democrats did not want to pass a gun ban bill last year. Colorado Democrats watered theirs down to become a permit to purchase, which isn't great, but they backed off of their complete ban. Virginia Democrats, man, they're moving full speed ahead, right? I mean, this is the first time that they're in complete control of state government since 2020 or since the 2019 election cycle. And there's no moderation here, man. I mean, I'm looking at these bills and we've got more to come, by the way. I mean, there's more coming down the pike this week. But what we've seen so far, again, outright bans on the sale, the manufacture of the most commonly sold rifle in the country. There is an outright ban on possession. Mm-hmm. No grandfather clause for 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who legally own these guns right now. Mm-hmm. These guns that are deemed assault firearms under Virginia law. And the effective date of this gun ban bill is July 1st this year. Yeah. So, you know, again, that offers the opportunity for another court challenge, right? If you're a young adult and all of a sudden you've been told you can't keep the gun that you legally own. I mean, but I got to tell you, I mean, a court challenge.
Years out.
It's a great backup plan, right? But we're talking years out, and the threat exists. The existential threat to our Second Amendment rights exists right now in the Old Dominion.
The only saving grace we have is Thomas. And I'll put Kavanaugh in there, too, because of the way he wrote his opinion on the refusal to take the Fourth Circuit case that you and I have talked about almost endlessly, that they're going to take one of those cases. And this, guys, ladies and gentlemen, the Supreme Court is going to take these cases at some point. And, you know, look, Thomas is getting older. All right. Kavanaugh's already signaled they're going to. And that assault weapons ban case, and that's their terminology, ladies and gentlemen, not mine, not Cam's, it's theirs. They're going to take these cases, and that's going to bode very well for Virginia. But we're talking years down the road. Now, you're talking the Seventh and Third splits. Trump flipped the Third Circuit. So I believe you're absolutely correct in that. That is going to cause a circuit split. Now you're looking at filing another case at cert. Now you're looking at 2, 3, 4 more Supreme Court sessions down the road. We don't know where Thomas is going to be at that point. We don't know where Alito's going to be at that point. All right. So while we are going to have to rely, unfortunately, on the court cases to fix these problems, we are looking at 1 or 2 high school educations passing. Your 10-year-old will be 20 by the time this gets done. So let me put that in perspective. And that's if we're lucky and get them. There's no guarantee, folks. There's no guarantee. The only guarantee here is stop electing Democrat gun grabbers. That's your guarantee. But we're past that now. Now, look, you go back, you know, we talk about the second class right. We talk about permits. Let's go back to Bruin. Bruin upheld the permitting scheme as constitutional in the decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now, here's what's going to happen with that. This is not even a bold prediction, Cam. That will eventually go bye-bye. When more states pick up constitutional carry, if we had another Thomas is probably not going to live long enough, sadly, to see that happen. Again, we are talking years down the road. Now, 18 to 20 year olds in Virginia, that's complete confiscation. Turn them in or you're a criminal.
Yeah.
Think about that, folks.
And the one, you know, we're talking to the, you know, we've been talking about these court cases, but we're talking about these cases at the federal level. It should be noted, though, Virginia has an analog in its state constitution, right? And we actually saw, this was a case that was brought by VCDL, Gun Owners of America, challenging the universal background check requirement in Virginia. And we actually had a judge, a circuit judge in, I believe, Lynchburg, that said, yeah, this is unconstitutional as it applies to 18, 19, 20-year-olds because there's no way for them to undergo a background check and be approved by a handgun because federal law prohibits them from buying a handgun, right, at retail. And so he tossed out the entirety of that law. We also saw an earlier case where 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who could not carry, a state-level judge said, no, that's unconstitutional too. So we'll be able to bring challenges in state court as well. And I would expect, you know, again, if that assault weapon ban passes without a grandfather clause for those who already own these firearms, that'll be challenged in court. I think the underlying premise will be challenged as well. So we are going to see a very busy, you know, round of litigation, I think, with every one of these bills that that gets approved. But as you say, man, I mean, that's playing defense, right? And the goal here is to stop these bad bills from becoming bad laws in the first place. And in order to do that, like you said, man, you've got to stop Democrats from gaining positions of power, right? And in Virginia, we had Democrats, they now have a supermajority in the House of Delegates. I mean, they can lose a half dozen Democrats on these gun control bills.
They picked up 18. They picked up 18 in the House of Delegates. Now, you know, again, we're talking about court. This is all we have to rely on in the state of Virginia now. And again, we're talking years down the road. And you're right on those state challenges. VCDL and the NRA and GOA and SAF. I mean, look, you know, as far as I think I mentioned this last night on my program, SAF might as well just open an office in Richmond. Okay.
Right.
GOA is already there. National Rifle Association is already there. VCDL is there. And these are all incredibly effective groups. And will they see some success? Yes, they will see some success in some of these cases. But we're going to see appeal after appeal after appeal on some of them. And I don't know which ones they are because we haven't seen it play out yet. We still have until Wednesday before the pre-filing deadline. Expect another 8 to 10 anti-gun bills, in my estimation. Mm-hmm. I'll be shocked if it's less than that. There were, I think, over 30 bills vetoed in Virginia. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Some of them were duplicates. But yeah, there were more than 30 bills that Youngkin vetoed that passed the legislature in the past couple of sessions, right? And
so look for every Democrat that was in the House of Delegates at that point in time to come back and refile those bills. Mm-hmm. So expect to see close to 30 of those bills. They might combine a few of them. Who knows? But again, we're relying on a court system here to take care of this problem. And I feel terrible. Let's just go here because we have to talk about it. Years ago on the show, I've made comments over many years that if the Democrats keep pushing these issues, and it wasn't just necessarily guns, it was other issues as well, but we'll focus on the gun issue here. If the Democrats keep pushing this issue, good, hardworking, decent, law-abiding Americans are going to have to be forced to make decisions they never thought they would have to make as freedom-loving Americans in this country. And that is, people would say to me, oh, what are you talking about? You're talking about going to war? No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about individual decisions. We talked about Bristol last night when I was talking in the roundtable with Brad Primo, who lives in Tennessee. You know Bristol, Virginia. If you're drunk driving and weave across the line, you're weaving in Tennessee and Virginia.
Right.
People walk across the street to get a burger and go back to Tennessee to go to work. It's now illegal with reciprocal bills because Tennessee doesn't have the training requirements that Virginia is going to demand as well. So there's a great example of a decision. Do I walk across the street with my firearm to go get a McDonald's and then go back to my office? Okay. What do I do when I visit my family in Virginia? These are decisions, ladies and gentlemen, that you're being forced to make because of Democrat politicians who somehow feel they possess the moral authority to tell you what you can and can't do to defend your life. So you have a decision to make. Am I going to carry my gun? The Democrats have drawn a red line in the sand in the state of Virginia. You have to decide whether or not you're going to cross it. And Cam, that begs the bigger question. How much of this are we going to take? Are we going to wait another 4 years for another election? At what point in time does this stop? So yes, we want the Supreme Court to step in. But the Democrats couldn't care less about the Supreme Court. They're going to continue to push this and push this and push this. And we are years out now in Virginia. And the sad part is the legislature hasn't even convened yet.
Yeah.
The clock is just getting ready to start ticking on this. This is what happens when you vote for Democrats, ladies and gentlemen. And those of you gun owners who were too lazy to get to the polls, you own this. And frankly, I don't have any sympathy for you, quite frankly. You get what you deserve. And I feel the same way about New York. Okay. There's good, decent, hardworking people up there that are just stuck because of Democrats, because they're outgunned or outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
Californians, same way. Virginians, you're not. You just voted wrong.
Yeah, well, and listen, you know, and I want this to be a cautionary tale for gun owners around the country, because, you know, after the elections, I heard a lot of people say, well, Virginia was a blue state anyway. No, it really wasn't. I mean, again, when Democrats were able to pick up 18 seats, that's cause for alarm, right? So I don't care if you think you're in a safe red state. You've got to get out. You've got to be motivated. You have got to vote. You've got to encourage every gun owner you know to get out and vote. This is, you know, the elections this year are going to have major consequences. You're talking about Georgia, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Georgia. Look, I live in the most conservative county in the state of Georgia. You think I feel safe? We came that far from having Stacey Abrams as our governor.
Yeah.
We got lucky.
I mean, you got Raphael Warnock, you got John Ossoff as your senators, right? And there was another canary in the coal mine. Wasn't there a board, like some sort of commission, right, where Democrats were able to flip that?
Yeah.
And again, sort of a canary in the coal mine moment, right? Yeah, absolutely. We think of Georgia.
We face the same problem that every blue state faces. And I love this saying, there's no such thing as a blue state, only blue cities.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the state of Georgia, that is a prime example. Prime example. Our largest city is sadly Atlanta. As you want to look back in history, as far as I'm concerned, Sherman should have left a couple battalions and said they try to rebuild it, knock it down until they get the message. Who knows where we would have been today? But Atlanta is the great stain on conservatism in the state of Georgia. When you get outside of Atlanta, save for a couple counties down by maybe Valdosta, up in Athens where the college is, but they've already redistricted the Democrats out. It's all blue up there. But each individual district votes red because of the way they redistricted. So God bless them for playing pool that way. But you get around something, the rest of this state is bright red, just like Virginia. Look at the electoral map of the state of Virginia, for crying out loud.
Yep.
If it weren't for these pockets of population centers, and Atlanta's as corrupt as it gets. We all know that. The whole country knows it. They just all of a sudden found 315,000 ballots that, they were counted illegally. Trump lost the state, supposedly, if you believe that, by about 11,796 votes or something stupid like that. Okay. He won this state. I don't care what anybody says. It's that simple. But it's Atlanta. It's the cities that are a stain. And I don't know how that's combated. I would love to see an electoral college at the state level, quite frankly. But I don't know how we get past that. It's the only saving grace the Democrats have is to infect the other counties. And you know what? They've been successful. Gwinnett County, when I first moved here, was a fairly conservative, reliably conservative county. It is now as blue as the sky. All right. They're like a cancer. It just keeps growing. And they know how they're doing it. And they're playing the long game. And we're suffering from it. You're suffering from it right now.
Yeah. I mean, I saw this, you know, I moved to Virginia in 2004, moved to Fairfax County, which was purple at the time. Loudoun County was still red. Prince William County was still red. That whole area is now, you know, deep blue. Loudoun County has been lost. Prince William County has been lost.
Fairfax County's,
you know, 70-80% Democrat now. And you're right about that. You know, and I mean, listen, I would love to see. I saw the New York Times had a story today about some blue dog Democrat congresswoman. And, you know, can Democrats talk to rural Americans? Can they, you know, make inroads? Look, I would love nothing more than to see a blue dog coalition of Democrats who are truly pro Second Amendment. I just don't see it. All right.
They're not here.
Yeah, they're not.
I don't even know that there's such a term anymore. You know, you go look at a guy like Zell Miller. Every time I drive up to LJ to go up to the mountains, I cross off 575. It turns into 515, which is the Zell Miller Highway. I would have voted for Zell Miller. I didn't have a chance to because I didn't live here at the time he was in office. But at the same time, that's a Democrat I likely could have supported because he was a fiscally conservative, gun-loving, patriotic American who likely would not be a Democrat in today's party. But I could say the same thing about John Kennedy. We can go back and talk about this all day long. This is not the same Democrat Party that you knew growing up if you're my age. Or my parents even were. I don't even know the term blue dog exists anymore, but there were a lot in the state of Georgia. There were. Zell Miller is a prime example of that. Zell Miller is no longer here. Now you have Raphael Warnock, as you mentioned. This guy, you know, and John Ossoff. Here's how bad John Ossoff is. They keep his mouth shut because he's so bad. They don't want him in the news at all so he can keep his seat. Now, he's on the edge right now. I don't think Ossoff's going to survive, particularly in the era of Trump in a second term. Warnock is also on the edge. And I hate getting information and emails from them, from Raphael Warnock, telling me he's fighting for me. He isn't fighting for me on any level. And I've called his office. Yeah. All right. Guys, I don't know. I'm angry. Mark came out of the box a little bit today on a Monday. I am very, very disappointed at what happened in Virginia. And it's fun to be right, but not in a situation like this. You and I had talked about this for so long. The prediction was so easy. And now it's upon us. And people are going to have to make terrible, terrible decisions in the state of Virginia. And unfortunately, it's being forced upon you folks. Sad. Hey,
including whether to stay. I mean, I got a text on, I think this was a Saturday night, from a friend who shall remain nameless. But they work in media in the D.C. area, live in Virginia. And they asked, are you moving to West Virginia? And they were serious, you know, and I wrote back and I was like, no, not now anyway. I mean, you know, my wife and I moved here in 2012 to Central Virginia. This was our forever home. I've still got two kids. My youngest two kids are still here. I'm not going to uproot them. If it was just me, I honestly probably would be looking at real estate in West Virginia. But for the moment, I'm staying and fighting. And I know it's an uphill battle. I know I'm going to lose a lot of these battles. But
yeah, you are.
I'm going to stay and fight. I'm going to raise my voice. I hope that folks will show up in Richmond for the VCDL's Gun Owner Lobby Day on January 19th.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. Thank you for bringing that up. That's going to be a huge telltale sign as to what type of fight we have in us. I, you know, when things like this happen, a lot of people get very discouraged and they think, I don't stand a chance. The Democrats control everything. There's nothing I can do. Guys, if you're in Virginia, and you know, what was the estimate the media gave us? 10,000 people, when we all saw it was at least 50,000 people, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not 100,000 people. Yeah, 2020. If there's not 100,000 people out there fighting. Now, there's also a catch-22 here. If they're able to bring, and if any organization can do it, VCDL can do it, particularly in conjunction with help from the GOA and the NRA right in their backyard. So that's very, I would love to see that. Wouldn't you? Six figures out there making their point heard. You're not taking my guns. We're going to stand here and we're going to fight. If they don't see that, that reeks of complacency. There's people that have just thrown their hands up and said, well, I'm just going to carry my gun anyway. Concealed means concealed. I don't care what they do anymore. I have friends that live in Virginia Beach that have a lot of money who have said, I don't pay attention to it anymore. I'm at a point in my life, I don't even pay attention to Richmond politics. I do what I do. They'll leave me alone. I'm a good person. Well, yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Unfortunately,
right.
There will be some people that will be made examples. But on the flip side of that, Cam, if 100,000 plus people do show up, what does that say about what happened in the last election cycle?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where were they? Right.
Absolutely. And
frustrating.
You know, again, we saw that 6 years ago. We may see that again this year. I hope we see a huge turnout, honestly.
I hope so.
You know, and the other thing is, you know, 6 years ago, actually December 2019 into January 2020, you know, the segment of the sanctuary movement sweeping across the state of Virginia. We have really not seen that reemerge. But I suspect that, you know, as these bills start to draw more attention, you are going to see a resurgence of Second Amendment sanctuaries across rural parts of Virginia, where you've got county sheriffs and hopefully this time, you know, Commonwealth's attorneys as well, saying, listen, we're not going to be enforcing any laws that infringe on your right to keep and bear arms. It is our, you know, discretion to decide what we're going to be prosecuting, what we're going to be arresting folks for. And if you got a 20 round magazine, I'm not going to arrest you for that. If you're 19 years old, you legally purchased that AR-15. I'm not going to arrest you if I catch you hunting on your property. We need to see that, and we need to be demanding that of our local officials here in the Commonwealth. Well,
why hasn't that brings up another good point. I love talking with you, two hosts going back and forth. I have full of questions for you on your own show. You know, why haven't we seen any of those sheriffs in those sanctuary counties? And maybe we have. You correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not there. I haven't seen it yet. I know it would have been written about. You'd have been talking about it, writing about it. AWR would have been writing about it and talking about it. I haven't seen it yet. I would like to see some proactivity from some of these Second Amendment sanctuary cities that would put pressure. If you've got sheriffs, maybe that's in the avenue right now, ladies and gentlemen, if you live there, put pressure on your sheriff in a Second Amendment sanctuary. Make your voice heard. Call a press conference. Tell them, here come these gun control bills. I'm not going to enforce these, and stand up. Another problem you have is you've got an absolute lunatic as your AG.
Yeah.
Now, that's this guy's going to act as an activist and may very well want to go after some of these people. So this is a very, very real fight in Virginia that is getting ready to unfold. And those of you who think, thank God, I don't live there. All right. Virginia is a beautiful place, by the way. I love it. I have a lot of history there, graduated college there, a lot of history in Virginia. But guys, what you're seeing in Virginia is what the Democrats want for you. Everywhere. They couldn't care less about the rule of law, the sanctity of our Constitution, our Second Amendment freedoms and rights. They don't care about Supreme Court precedent. They don't care. They're going to do what they do and force it to court. And this is what they want from you at a federal level. And you had better be prepared. The other thing is, too, VCDL, you do not have to live in Virginia to be a member of a Virginia Citizens Defense League, ladies and gentlemen. Dig into your couch change. Pull out $5 in quarters. You know it's in there. You haven't cleaned underneath those couch cushions. Now's the time to do it and throw that money at VCDL. And I would highly recommend, I know times are tight. It's tight for all of us. I get it. Believe me. I own my business. I feel it like everybody else. Guys, if you got $5, divvy it up between five organizations and help, because this is what they want for you at a federal level. This is not just Virginians' fight. This is our fight. And it's a brutal one. Brutal. Yeah.
It is. I know we'll be talking a lot about it both here on Cam and Company and on Armed American Radio as well. Mark, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on the program. I'm picturing some guitar playing in your immediate future.
It is sitting right here.
Maybe a little rock from down under, maybe a little AC/DC today.
I'm going to warm up today and play the entire Back in Black album before I start riffing some riffs. Yeah, yeah. I would love to do that on the show during breaks, but the copyrights would kill me and knock me right off the rip. YouTube would throw me off the internet again.
Well, hey, man, listen, I'm glad you can at least help me smile and put a little laugh here in what is some very troubling times in Virginia. Again, folks, check out Mark each and every day, Daily Defense, Armed American Radio, MonsterCast Sunday night. And Mark, we'll be doing this again very soon, man. Thanks for joining me on the program today.
Solomon's Proverbs, baby. Keep them alive. This too shall pass. That applies for good and bad. Guys, keep the faith.
Once again, my appreciation to Mark for joining us on the program, and looking forward to doing this again very soon. And, you know, I would love to hear from Virginia gun owners. You can drop me an email, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. Leave a comment here below. Are you thinking about leaving? You know, again, my first inclination after Election Day was I'm staying and fighting. And I am staying and fighting, but I have to say, I mean, that sort of, you know, rock rib. No, this is the place where I wanted to put down my roots. I've buried a son. I've buried a wife here. I'm not leaving. More and more, I've been thinking, you know, would that change if my youngest kids weren't at home, if it really were just me? I mean, I could dig up the urns. I can move them to West Virginia with me, but that is a decision that I do not have to make at this point in time. But while I am here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, I'm going to fight for my right to keep and bear arms, as it is under assault like never before. I mean, I got to tell you, I'll be 52 this year, with the exception of the 4 years where Democrats had complete control of the state government between 2020 and 2023, no, 2021, actually, 2022. That's when Youngkin and Winston Earl Sears and Jason Meares took over. There was that brief window where Democrats had complete control of state government, and they passed about a half dozen gun control bills, but they didn't pass the really onerous ones. They didn't get the gun ban bill. They didn't get the magazine ban bill. This is going to be the first time in my life that I have lived in what is truly an anti-gun state. And Virginia, at the end of this year, is going to look a lot more like New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, California, than Maryland even, than West Virginia, than North Carolina, than Georgia, Texas, South Carolina. This is new for me. And I'm not enjoying it. But I, like I said, I promise we're not going to be focusing exclusively on what's going on in Virginia. As the legislative sessions get underway, we're going to be looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly in all 50 states. But, you know, just to reiterate what I Mark and I were talking about here, even if you think you live in the rubiest red state of all, you better vote like and you better act like your rights depend on what happens in the midterm elections, because they do. And if Democrats make the same inroads in your state that they made in Virginia last election cycle here in our state in 2025, you could be in for a world of hurt. And I hate to see that happen to any gun owners, including myself and including you. All right, let's move on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Harris County, Texas. I believe this is from Fox in Fort Worth. Actually, no, this is from Click to Houston, the NBC affiliate there in Houston, Texas. Victim Services Director for Crime Stoppers of Houston cites bond decisions in murder of 25-year-old woman. So there was a shooting on board a Metro bus in Houston, Texas. 25-year-old woman was killed. This was last Wednesday, 2:30 in the afternoon. She was on her way to work when she was shot and killed. 16-year-old boy was also shot and survived. And again, the head of Crime Stoppers in Houston says that the suspects in this case should not have been out on the street. 17-year-old Braden Smith, now charged with murder. 18-year-old Patrick Scott, charged with unlawful carrying of a weapon. Smith is apparently a current student in the Alief Independent School District. Scott is a former student there in the district. According to investigators, the shooting stemmed from an argument between the two suspects while the bus was stopped to pick up passengers. Both suspects then fled the scene but were later arrested with assistance from multiple law enforcement agencies. Andy Kahan, who's the Director of Victim Services at Crime Stoppers of Houston, says you got to look at the suspects' criminal histories and prior court decisions. Says that the defendant who was charged with murder was on juvenile probation for aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon. He's 17 years old. What's he doing on probation for aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon? Kahan says that his bond in that case initially set at $50,000 before it was reduced down to $15,000. He was able to bond out. Kahan also said that the other individual under court supervision at the time of the shooting said while he was on probation, he violated his probation conditions repeatedly and again without consequence. Kahan says, my argument clearly is that he should have been on the bus to begin with. I would happen to agree with Mr. Kahan, who, by the way, has been railing about this on a regular basis on the Fox affiliate in Houston for a number of years. The revolving door of justice. You know, like Mark was saying, there's no such thing as blue states, just blue cities. Well, Houston, Texas is a big blue city. Harris County is a big blue county in the red state of Texas. And you've got these soft on crime policies. You've got these soft on crime judges. You got a broken juvenile justice system, which, by the way, and that is a broader conversation. I know we've talked about that before. The juvenile justice systems in states across the country, I think, are in need of an overhaul. And not in the, you know, raise the age direction like New York has done and some other states have done, where we make it more difficult to charge juvenile offenders as adults. I say this every time. I mean it every time. I understand that the goal of the juvenile justice system is rehabilitation. I understand we don't want to lock these kids up, throw them away, say they got no future based on, you know, one criminal charge, one mistake that they made. I get that. But we're not talking about one-offs here, right? We're talking about 16, 17-year-olds with a criminal history that would make a grown man blush. And time again, they're essentially told, hey, next time there are going to be consequences. If you keep going down this road, then sooner or later we're going to get tough on you. And that doesn't seem to be working. So, yeah, we do need to change our juvenile justice system. We do need to make it easier to charge prolific repeat offenders as adults and provide them with actual consequences, because that's just not happening in the juvenile justice system right now. Today's Armed Citizen story, also from the Lone Star State, here where two shot and injured in a robbery near a Fort Worth elementary school. One of those injured, the armed citizen who fought back against this robbery. Don't have a ton of information here. Happened 7 p.m. or so Thursday evening. Officers dispatched to the Hubbard Heights Elementary School there in Fort Worth. Someone called 911 to say that they were being robbed and that a male had been shot. Police say the preliminary investigation determined that there was an exchange of gunfire between the two parties. One wounded person taken by private vehicle to a hospital, shot twice in the legs, expected to survive. Officers found the second wounded person at another hospital. Police say a, quote, person of interest in the case is in custody. But again, that's about all we know at this moment. Sounds like the armed citizen did call 911 to report, again, that he was being robbed, or they were being robbed, and that they shot somebody in self-defense. But hopefully we'll learn more details in the days to come. And finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in Wisconsin who were able to save a semi driver after he crashed into a gas station in the town of Wrightstown, Wisconsin. This, again, a couple days ago, this was last Thursday morning. According to NBC 26 there in Wisconsin, Kyle Swalheim was running late for work when he saw this semi going in his direction at what he estimates was about 30 miles an hour. He said, I knew something was wrong. Truck drove over the median, took down a street sign. Swalheim's talking to his fiance on the phone. He said, honey, I got to go. He's going to slam right into that building. And he did slam into this gas station. Swalheim says, I wasn't even thinking, it was just reaction. He just ran over, try to help the semi driver. He says there were fortunately no other cars parked at the gas station at the time, only an attendant inside the building. The crash narrowly missed the counter where the clerk was standing. Swalheim and another good Samaritan had to clear debris to get to the semi driver who was still inside that running vehicle. The doors locked, the driver not responsive. As Swalheim's pounding on the driver's side window, a woman who had been pumping gas called 911. Swalheim ran out to his work van. He said, I grabbed a hammer. I broke a hole in the window, pulled the glass out. Then I reached in and I shut the truck off. Exhaust was actually funneling into that gas station. When first responders arrived on scene, Swalheim actually gave them a wrench so they could turn off the gas line. He said, you know, it was just crazy. He said, I ended up getting a later start than I wanted to that morning. He was about a half hour behind schedule, he says, when he left his house for work. And he said, I was just in the right spot at the right time to just jump in and try to help. Semi-driver transported to local hospital following the crash. No updates on the extent of his injuries or if he was involved in some type of medical emergency that precipitated that crash. But again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save that driver's life. Kyle Swalheim and at least one other anonymous good Samaritan in Wrightstown, Wisconsin. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company, and I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of the day today, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership. You get great benefits at every tier of support, and no matter which one you choose, I want to thank you for supporting the work that we're doing here at Bearing Arms. It really does make a difference. As Mark Walter said, I know times are tight for all of us, so your support is significant, and it truly is appreciated and recognized. All right, enjoy the rest of your Monday, as good as Mondays can be. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.